You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Much of Eduardo Galeano's work has focused on the history and culture of the Americas, but in his latest book, he has broadened his scope to the history of the world. Mirrors, Stories of Almost Everyone, is translated by Mark Fried. It's published here in the United States by Nation Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Eduardo Galeano back to the show today. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Hello. Yes, again.
Your Memory of Fire trilogy told the story of 500 years of the history of the Americas. What made you want to retell 5,000 years of the history of the world?
Yeah, it's an absolutely mad project, a crazy adventure. Only possible for a crazy writer as I am myself. But it was such a pleasure also, this act of madness. You know, trying to recover universal memory with no boundaries of maps or time. And trying also to do it, to make it as a homage to human diversity.
Well, you wrote Memory of Fire over 20 years ago. Have you been working on this idea all that time? Or is this something that you just thought, gee, I haven't put myself through a miserable experience for a while. I think I'll do it again.
No, it's true. This is a book that was growing inside myself, fluent like a subterranean river.
So you were collecting things all along?
Yes. Things came to me, saying, I want to be told. And so I was writing short stories, and so I like to do it. It's a pleasure. And afterwards, they began connected between them, the interlinking of. Finally, the book has 600 surviving short stories of a total of perhaps 800 or 900 I wrote all along many years.
And is this 600 all the ones you wrote? I have a feeling that you may have thrown a few out.
No, yes. It was difficult to sacrifice the stories that didn't enter into the melody, because it's like music, no? There are some sounds that doesn't enter. They are beautiful, but they cannot get inside. And it was difficult because each story is alive, so it touched your back and said, please, let me in. Am I ugly? Am I disagreeable? Why do you don't like me? No, I do like you, but you cannot enter in this house.
So did you find yourself writing about certain themes and then realizing you're going to have to bring in more things because you had to complete the theme?
It's impossible to complete, can you imagine, a history of everything. But it's just some untold stories or unknown stories that deserve to be written.
Well, some of the things are about famous people and some are about less famous people. But you've written so much about history. Do you think of yourself as a historian?
No, I'm not.
Because
my
first take was this must be a collection of fiction, and then I realized no, this is nonfiction,
even though
it's written with the kind of language, approach to language of a writer of fiction.
Yes, but it's not fiction. No, I'm writing about things that really happened. And I'm not a historian because for me there are no boundaries between the present and the past. And so this book goes and came back and jump from one century to another with a certain inside coherence that makes it possible to read it, because otherwise it would be absolutely impossible to get inside such a mess.
But what is it about this approach to writing that appeals to you? You did The Open Veins of Latin America, which was also made up of a series of essays. And Voices of Time was 333
yes.
stories, all very brief. Is this just the way your mind works? Are you inventing a form for yourself?
It's a way I like to be saying and to write, saying, more with less. And my way of fighting against the inflation of words, which is more dangerous than the money inflation. at least in Latin America. I don't know in other places, but we suffer this inflation of words.
And so, what do you mean by that? You mean people overwrite?
Overwrite, yes, and speak too much and write too much. And I try to be a good pupil of Juan Rulfo, the great Mexican writer, who once told me that it's true that you write with a pencil, but especially with the back part of the pencil where the rubber is.
But don't you think that Argentinians are happy to be past the hyperinflation that plagued their country a few years ago? And be perfectly happy to have somebody, a politician, go on and make a longer speech than necessary?
Yes, perhaps they're happy. I don't know.
I mean, Hugo
but
Chavez
it's not
goes,
my
talks
style,
forever.
Not my way of being. I like to believe it's true what another master, Juan Carlos Sonetti, told me once, saying, the only words that deserve to exist are the words better than silence. Mm. He said it was a Chinese proverb, but he was a liar. He lied all the time to give prestige to his sentences. But it was his invention, and it's a very, very beautiful invention.
He was a great writer, and there are a number of other great writers from South America, Latin America, who are barely known in this country, but I'm sure were important to you, some of whom you've met, others, something like Machado de Assis,
Machado de Assis, maybe
one of the greatest writers that ever lived, but I doubt that 10% of all Americans even know who he was.
Yes, there are several.
Do you think it's the curse of Latin America that it is kind of, except in Latin America, it's kind of unknown, all of the treasures that it has created?
No, it depends. No, there are some mysterious roads for art. Who knows? Who knows? Vivaldi, for instance, is so popular nowadays, Vivaldi. And Vivaldi was unknown during almost two centuries and a half. And he was recovered by Israel Pound. Mm-hmm. And paradox of paradoxes. He was recovered by Israel Pound when nobody knew Vivaldi existed, at the beginning and the end of the radio propaganda Israel Pound was doing for Mussolini. Mm-hmm. He had a program in the radio of fascist propaganda.
He wound up in the insane asylum as a
result. He couldn't get a single new fascist. I mean, he couldn't convince anybody, but he was the responsible of recovering such a master, of a source of beauty as Vivaldi is, but he was hidden during so long, no?
Well, you obviously love those kinds of facts, and this book is filled with them, people I'd never heard of, like Avicenna. His canon of medicine became a standard medical text until the 18th century, and was it all wrong?
No. There are a lot of unknown people in the book, a lot of them, that I think should be recovered by collective history because they are an important part of the human rainbow, what I call the terrestrial rainbow, which is much more beautiful and full of colors than the rainbow in the sky. But this is a mutilated rainbow, this our rainbow, mutilated by racism, by machismo, by militarism, by elitism, by the arrogance of some countries which seems to think that they have been chosen by God to own the truth. And this book is just a way trying to help a little to recover the plenitude, the unbelievable beauty of the colors of our rainbow. And that's why there are so many stories about women, for instance. Black people, Indians, or unknown, almost unknown, distant places like China, they invented everything, or like India and so on, and especially Africa.
But you also
because about Africa, we don't know anything. America, all America, from north to south, is closely related to Africa, because the slaves not only brought their arms with them, they also brought their cultures, their music, their beauty. But what do we know about Africa? Nothing, except what a professor called Tarzan taught us. And Tarzan was never in Africa, because he was invented by Edgar Rice Burroughs, a talented writer, English writer, but he was never in Africa.
I mentioned Machado de Assis. He was the son of slaves.
Yes.
Eduardo Galeano.
Grandson of slaves. Yes, it's true.
Eduardo Galeano's latest book is called Mirror Stories of Almost Everyone. It's published by Nation Books. Some of these stories are linked to famous people. For example, James Coleman, who is connected to Charles Darwin.
Yes.
And then we have Alberto Santos Dumont.
No, but it's true. He's in Darwin's books, and he was the man that had that magic power to see inside the world, inside distant places, inside people, and he was blind. And he said, "I see with my feet." And he's absolutely unknown.
And he gave a lot of insights to Darwin.
Darwin is very well known, of course, but he had this power also. Yeah, he had so many eyes, several eyes.
One of the people I never heard of was Alberto Santos Dumont. I always think of the Wright brothers as the fathers of the modern airplane.
Santos Dumont, yes, a Brazilian. The invention of airplane is not clear. I mean, Brazilians said it was an invention of Alberto Santos Dumont, and there are the brothers Wright and other possibilities.
The French have claims as well.
The French. But the fact is that this little man, very little man, Alberto Santos Dumont, was able to be one of the inventors of the airplane. I don't know if he's a single one, but a very important inventor. And he was denouncing during his entire life the use of the invention as a war tool, as a tool of death. And this is a part of it that I am interested in underlying. No?
In an interview, you asked, are all societies doomed to amnesia, or are there communities that have preserved their collective cultural memory? Well, what do you mean by amnesia in this context?
Amnesia in the world, not only in the United States, in the entire world. But to tell you just an example about the United States, Obama is president now. I don't know if he's black or half black. It's not important. But the fact is that 15 minutes ago, there were some facts about racism here that are still unknown or have been forgotten. And so this adds merit to the fact that nowadays the USA can have a president as Obama. For instance, in 1942, the Pentagon forbade the transfusion of the so-called black blood. They were entering, the United States were entering in the Second World War, and the plasma saved millions and millions of lives. Not the inventor of the plasma, but the man who made it possible was a scientific called Charles Drew, who was black, and he was the director of the Red Cross at that time. And so he resigned, or was resigned, I don't know, because he said, "I am not going to obey this stupid order. Black blood does not exist. All bloods are red." And this is an unknown, or almost unknown, but very important chapter in the history of this nation. And of course, we all suffer amnesia, all of us. When I was a child, a little child, I was obliged in the school to pay homage each day to the father of the poor, so-called the father of the poor, Francisco Antonio Maciel. So we entered at the classroom, We were obliged to do it. Oh, the father of the poor. 20, 30 years later, I knew that this father of the poor, this saint, was selling human flesh because he was a slave trader. So this is another case. There are millions of cases of amnesia or betraying real history also.
Well, is history always a question of power? Who has it and who doesn't? Because common cultural memory and history is a process of elimination by definition, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it's a private property, yes. Power owns memory as it owns everything. And we should do something against it, because recovering the past is not only important for the museums, it's also important for our present life. Just we have this typically human ability to repeat the same mistakes and to fall in the same holes and so on, no? But we should avoid it. At least knowing or trying to know what happened. I'm not a historian, but I think if I can find the words to tell something that happened in the past in such a way that the reader may feel that it's happening now, then history escaped away from the museums and is again in the streets, in the country fields.
Do you feel safer these days? In the 70s, you had to flee two different countries that you were living in. First, Uruguay after the military coup in 1973, and then Argentina 3 years later after another military coup where you were among those targeted by the infamous death squads.
Yes.
Is that no longer the case in Latin America? Can we feel sure or assured that that sort of thing is not going to happen anymore?
Well, it depends. In my situation, I'm lucky. I'm a lucky person. I'm alive. I'm free. And I live in Montevideo, which is a very special city, strange city, in which you can walk and you can breathe. Two luxuries in the modern world, to breathe and to walk. But this is not the situation of many people that are being maltreated or even killed just for the fact of being poor, for instance, or punished for the sin of trying to work, like is the case of the landless peasants in Brazil, that they are periodically killed because they want to work. And this is, in our world, is a terrible sin. Why would you want to work? Are you crazy?
Hugo Chavez gave a copy of your book, Open Veins of Latin America, which you wrote in 1971, I think, to President Barack Obama last month during the Summit of the Americas. Did you know that President Chavez was planning to do that?
No, nobody knew. No, no.
It must have pleased you. Your sales immediately went up. You were number two on Amazon almost immediately.
Yes, but it was, I mean, of course I'm happy about it, and every news about diffusion of what I write, what I say, is a good news for me. I'm not playing the false humble man saying, no, I don't care at all. Of course I care, as anybody else. But I know perfectly well that the quality of a book does not depend of its situation in the best-selling list, not at all. You may be a great bestseller and a horrible author producing horrible books. The market is the market, and reality, human reality, is sometimes quite different from the market.
Eduardo Galeano's latest book is a wonderful book. It's called Mirrors, Stories of Almost Everyone, published by Nation Books and translated by Mark Fried. Do you work with him?
Yes, we work together. My English is poor, very poor, but Mark is a very open person, and he agrees to discuss sentence by sentence, word by word, with infinite patience. And so the book is, in a certain way, he's the co-author of the book, because it's very difficult to translate something from one language to another language in such a way that the translated words don't lose their music.
Mm-hmm. So you write for the musicality using Spanish, yes. And you would hope that that musicality was somehow captured by the English.
Yes, and yes, yes, yes. It's a different way of expressing music, but they are. He's a good musician. I'm always saying this, and he doesn't believe it, but it's true. Being a good translator implies being a good musician, because it's the most universal of languages, no? Music, indeed, and words are trying to go as far as music.
Well, you've been translated into 28 different languages, won many of the major literary awards, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today to talk about this latest one, Mirrors, Stories of Almost Everyone.
Well, okay. Thank you.
Eduardo Galeano will be reading tonight at 7 at the Society for Ethical Culture. That's at 2 West 64th Street. Up next, Philip Gurevich describes returning to Rwanda 15 years after the genocide and explains how the country is working toward reconciliation. This is WNYC, WNYC.org.